the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Negandhi, David Pollock, standing by, as well as Wright Thompson. Fantastic conversation with Wright. He has something pretty cool coming out on ESPN Plus this week. A conversation with Archie Manning. And you know, during the pandemic, Wright's one of those guys that he likes to go face-to-face in conversations as he gets deep into profiles. And it's tough to do, especially living in a Zoom world. And Wright has an interesting story on how it was set up in Oxford, where he could just get out and take a walk, and suddenly your next door neighbor and you're sitting down and, you know, socially distanced and having a conversation with Archie Manning. And it's a pretty cool build up. And Wright will share why he's so nervous, even to this day, sitting down talking to Archie and to profile something from 50 years ago and how his life changed in a span of 35 days. And what took place, and here we are. You know, he is royalty when it comes to college football and the NFL with the success of his career, as well as his two sons, and of course Olivia, and what they represent to many people in the SEC. So, great conversation later in the podcast. We're going to begin the podcast with Adam Rittenberg with the very latest news and information going on surrounding Ohio State and the college football playoff. And of course, don't forget David Pollock's picks, plus a guy that he has circled as your dude of the week that may be off the radar when it comes to the conversation with the Pac-12. Enjoy. We're going to begin the podcast with college sports reporter. That is Adam Rittenberg, and he has been all over the college football scene with us here on the podcast. And it feels like everything is developing and fluid as the season continues. So go figure. We're going to stick to that as well, as we tape this on a Wednesday morning. So things could change as the day unfolds. Adam, let's just start off the top here with Ohio State situation and the Big Ten. Do we anticipate that the Big Ten is going to find a way to amend their rules, the rules that they created before the season started, in anticipation to get the Ohio State into the Big Ten championship game on December 19th?
Yes, Kevin, I think they will. The Big Ten athletic directors met earlier today. I had what I'm told was a very productive and good discussion. You know, the league hasn't been always on the same page on a lot of things this season, but I think this one that there is more consensus, and they discussed the policy about the minimum number of games to get in the Big Ten championship game. You know, the key issue I'm told here, you know, which again has been discussed out in the open, but hadn't really been talked about among the ADs. They had no real discussion about this until today, is the fact that Ohio State beat Indiana on the field, and that, you know, it wasn't as though they needed to play a sixth game and win a sixth game to qualify. They simply needed to play a game. So even if they had lost to Michigan, which was very unlikely this weekend, but even if they lost to Michigan, they would have represented the East Division against Northwestern in Indianapolis. And so that's all, you know, that when you frame it that way, it's just hard not to recognize that Ohio State, you know, should be the East Division champion. Understand that maybe some disappointment on the Indiana side, but it wasn't as though they didn't have the opportunity to face Ohio State on the field. So I think that head-to-head result and the fact that that Ohio State simply needed to play a game, not even win a game, this weekend or against whoever, whether it's Michigan or another Big Ten team, that's all it would have taken to get them into the Big Ten championship game under the rules that they agreed on before the season.
And later in the podcast, Pollock and I will discuss other options potentially in the Big Ten. And I want to bring this up to you about it. And that is there a scenario out there where, you know, that we could see Ohio State play Iowa or Ohio State play Michigan on the 19th, while Indiana will get the chance to play Northwestern in the Big Ten championship, and that does not affect Ohio State's ability to get into the playoff?
Well, yeah, anything is possible in 2020, and there's still, you know, levels of approval for any sort of policy change, including at the presidential and chancellor level in the Big Ten. But, you know, my expectation, is to see Ohio State against Northwestern at Lucas Oil Stadium on December 19th. If that doesn't happen, I certainly think Iowa which moved up in this week's CFP rankings. Here they have Wisconsin this week, and if they beat Wisconsin, that would be six consecutive wins for the Hawkeyes. So that would make the most sense for the Big Ten to put Ohio State against a team that can help their resume, you know, certainly more than A&M's resume can be helped by playing Tennessee next week. So that's I think that would certainly go into the thinking if Ohio State isn't in Indianapolis for the title game.
What kind of vibe are you getting here as the messaging we've gotten so far the last 3 weeks from the playoff committee?
Well, I think it's a very small group, as usual, at the top. And I think Alabama is the one team that's essentially secured of a spot. I mean, even if they were to lose in the SEC title game, they're going to get in. I think Notre Dame would be a very interesting test case, Kevin, in this weird year if they were to lose to Clemson, especially in a competitive game. I think they'd have a great chance to get in. You know, for you know, Florida and for Clemson, it's pretty cut and dried. You have to win your championship game or you're probably out with a second loss. And then Ohio State's the big unknown. You know, if they don't play this weekend against anyone in the Big Ten, they're only going to have six games, six data points. Is that enough? You know, they were very impressive in their last game, you know, dominating Michigan State on the road despite being without, you know, more than 20 players because of COVID and other issues. So I think that really impressed the committee and kept them ahead of Texas A&M. The fact that Texas A&M is not playing this weekend isn't a good thing for the Aggies because, you know, they can't have really, they don't have an opportunity to win a conference championship, whereas Ohio State it probably does. So and then Cincinnati sitting out there certainly disappointed after being dropped behind a two-loss Iowa State team this past ranking. So it's a very small group, like you said, at the top, probably coming down to literally two teams for the fourth spot, unless it just works itself out like it often has during the CFP era.
Yeah, it has worked. A great point, too. We're in year seven, and it has seemed to work itself out in the process. The first couple of years, there were a lot of questions on, you know, the Big 12 will jump in and their fan base will say, nah, it didn't really work out, you know, but it has in general worked out with those four teams getting in. We'll see how this plays out the next couple of weeks. How about the Pac-12? You reported something earlier today on your Twitter feed on potentially a game and a game I thought that, you know, granted, they're not in the playoff conversation. I just wanted to see these two teams play in Washington and Oregon. What can you tell us about that game?
Right. Well, you're certainly no decision yet as of our talking here on Wednesday. But it's not a good sign when a team pauses activities midweek like Washington has. And, you know, Washington's been a team that's been affected by COVID, but because of its opponents, not so much because of itself. And so that's certainly something to monitor, you know, going into this weekend. You know, some people have brought up the idea, why doesn't the Pac-12 just put this game maybe next week along with Colorado and USC, the two undefeated teams that had their game canceled because of COVID at USC, and then play a Pac-12 championship game, you know, after Christmas, which I would think would be great. I mean, the league's not making the playoff. You know, why not have the longest regular season and the most definitive championship game possible? But yeah, as for Washington, we'll see where this goes. But it's never a good sign when a team is pausing activities, you know, with only a few games, a few days left before the actual game.
Adam, we appreciate the time. Of course, we're taping this on Wednesday morning, and we'll see if, you know, our audience, just keep that in mind. We'll see if things change down the road with any new information coming up Wednesday afternoon as well as Wednesday night when you hear and download the podcast. We always appreciate the time. Stay safe and healthy, and thank you.
All right, Kevin. It's a fluid year, fluid day, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it, buddy. Take care. Let's bring in David Pollack now. And David, honestly, when you look at the standings last night, obviously the top six hasn't changed. The big storyline is Cincinnati dropping one spot from 7 to 8 and watching, two-loss Iowa State moving up and some life if we have chaos for the Big 12. A little bit, we'll get into that in a second. But I just want to get your initial reaction to how everything's being played out. Also, following the news of Ohio State and Michigan not being able to be played this weekend.
I think there's a couple things that stood out with the rankings. When you look at non-Power 5, which obviously consists of Cincinnati and Coastal, they're ahead of the Pac-12. the highest Pac-12 team is USC, and they're behind Coastal and Cincinnati. I thought that was interesting. I'm not saying the Pac-12 deserves to be above them, but usually the Pac-12 garners more respect. And, you know, obviously the shortened amount of games matters, but it doesn't matter too much to Ohio State because they're up there. They're up there pretty high. But, you know, there's nothing surprising about the rankings. There's no, unfortunately, there's no drama unless we talk, unless the scenario happens that me, you, and Kirk talked about on Monday. Like, mm-hmm. we need some upsets in the big championship games in the SEC and the ACC. You know, Iowa State moving up is awesome for their program. It doesn't mean anything for the national championship picture. They're not getting in. There's no chance in Hades. Like, there's no scenario I could draw up, period, that would, I think, would get them in. You know, so we got another week of very similar to the same. And, you know, nothing too exciting to talk about. I wish it was more, and I wish we had more drama, but I can't really find any.
I feel bad for Cincinnati, though. You know, they're dealing with, of course, COVID.
They didn't look good right last now. Week, man. They just didn't look sharp. I thought they could have looked better last week. That's
Stop.
Sarcasm. Obviously,
I know.
They didn't play.
Yes. And then they got to deal with it again within the program. I just feel bad for them because, honestly, like, they've done everything they can in a pandemic with the schedule in front of them, and they've looked good, especially the last 3 to 5 games where they Desmond Ritter's playing on a different level, matching the defense intensity.
Do you feel bad because they're below Iowa State, or do you feel bad because they should be a higher period?
No. I feel bad that they're below Iowa State. Like, if you look at Iowa State's playing really good football now. But let's not forget, they lost to Louisiana at the beginning of the season. And for Louisiana to be
17.
So, yeah, 12 spots behind them, like, that's got to be tough to swallow, to understand, hey, wait a second. They've got 2 losses. They lost to a Sun Belt team. And by the way, Sun Belt showing out. Coastal should have been maybe higher than 13. It's a tough pill to swallow, I think, if you're the Bearcats, because it would have been nice to see them sitting there at 7 and say, okay, let's just wait. And unfortunately for them, they can't do anything about it. I want to play one scenario out. Actually, a couple scenarios here with Ohio State. I want to get your thoughts. Does it matter to you if Ohio State doesn't reach the Big Ten title? Or do you like the suggestion of potentially having a Big Ten title game featuring Northwestern versus Indiana and Ohio State could play Iowa? Or we get the game, and that is Ohio State, Michigan on December 19th.
So A&M, Ohio State's not an option, because that's what I would take over all of that. I think
No, that's what I'm saying. No, Ohio State plays Michigan, or Ohio State plays Iowa, and the Big Ten allows Indiana to play Northwestern, and the committee says, great, you check off the boxes, you're playing an Iowa team that's in the top 20, or you're playing Michigan, we get the game, you know, that's literally about history and tradition, and we're still getting you in the playoff because you handle your business.
No, I know what you're saying. I'm saying I'd rather A&M and Ohio State play. I think
really?
That would be awesome to watch. Are you? I mean, I almost cursed right there.
No. You're saying Ohio State. You're saying Ohio State versus A&M.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, like, but that's not going to happen. Yeah,
why
that's
not
going to. But I, listen, you know,
dude, A&M needs it. It could be an awesome stepping off point for A&M. Listen, don't give me this schedule crap with ADs now. Like, BYU just and Coastal just scheduled a game in 32 minutes and 13 seconds.
Look, I agree, but Ohio State doesn't need it.
I know, but it would be awesome. Like, it would be amazing.
It would be incredible. It would be incredible, but I don't think that's realistic.
I don't care. I would like, personally, this has nothing to do with Ohio State and their chances of being in the playoffs. I would like at some point for the Big Ten to make a rule and actually stick to it. I would love to see Indiana get rewarded for playing the right amount of games, getting to where they needed to get to, and playing in the Big Ten championship game. I would like to see Iowa versus Ohio State. By the way, the game is going to be garbage because Michigan sucks, okay? Like, the Big M is garbage. There's nothing to watch about it that's redeeming. Let's not sugarcoat
it. I get that.
Like,
No. Listen, I get that. But you understand that this rivalry it means so much to the kids and I think the bases, the fan bases, the programs, it doesn't mean we're on the periphery, right? It doesn't mean anything to us. To them, you go to school to play Ohio State. You go to school to play Michigan. That's why you make the commitment, right?
And so does that mean Michigan people have stopped going to school the last 8 or 9 years? Because, I mean, they might as well not go. Or no.
Yeah. Taylor, make sure you put in that little that little drum smash right there after that little joke that Pollock put.
I'm just saying, like, I hear you, but there's a lot of things about this season that's different. There's a lot of things about this season that's unique. And if I'm Ohio State, I got to put myself in the best position to get to the Big Ten or to get to the playoff. And the best chance would be Iowa. Playing another good team would cement that, I think, where the committee looks at that team as being a top 20 team. You play Michigan, who's a 2-win team, who beat Rutgers in Minnesota and is horrible. I just, if I'm Ohio State, I would be pushing to get Iowa. I get the tradition and all that stuff, but traditionally Michigan is usually decent and they're not.
Yeah. And honestly, that's a fair point. That feels like the most realistic thing. And I was playing their best football right now. Winners of 5 in a row. And
they have no chance to beat Ohio State. But yeah,
they don't, but at least will you see that on the resume, right? That, hey, they hit all the notes. They played all the games they could play, not their fault. And we get the chance to see a 6-0 Ohio State in the conversation top four. Because listen, the best interest of the Big Ten is to make sure Ohio State gets in, right? It's making sure Ohio State is protected.
The only way Ohio State doesn't get into me is if we have the scenario of the weekend where Clemson beats Notre Dame and Florida beats Alabama. I think that's the only way we start having a legit debate. Otherwise, I'm pretty confident Ohio State's getting in. Like, I don't care.
But can you imagine the reaction to people on the outside if we have two SEC teams and two ACC teams who just played, two of them lost, and two of them still get in? Can you imagine?
It would be crazy.
Would be crazy.
But you know what? Alabama, Notre Dame's got 10 wins, homie. Like, mm-hmm. Clemson's got 9 wins. Alabama's got 9 wins. I mean, let's be – they played a lot of games and a lot of opportunities and have earned a lot of slack in the committee's eyes, I guarantee you, as opposed to playing 4 games. You know, like that's just, there's a big difference.
Yeah, it's wild. And I'm with you on the idea of Indiana getting the chance to, it's a special season, regardless of Penix being able to play. It's a special season. It would be cool to see that.
Man, that was big this weekend. It was a big super dog win for your boy. I was really excited about Indiana. I was jacked up.
You love him. You love
him. Dude, by the way, it's not Penix Jr. I think that takes that team down a notch for sure. Like, and to me, it's not. I don't think Penix Jr. is the best quarterback in the country by any stretch. And I think he's got a lot of room for growth in his game. But he can throw the ball off multiple platforms and anticipate really, really well. He's never going to be, I don't think, a 65% completion percentage guy, 70%. He's going to make mistakes, but his mobility also gives you extra possessions. And he's a really good player. The defense for me is just awesome. Like, that defense is so legit, it's crazy. They do such a good job with disguises and doing different things and blitz packages, and they just confuse the crap out of everybody they play, including Ohio State. But Ohio State obviously hit a bunch of big plays and scored on them. But, you know, Indiana also won and made Fields look as bad as he's ever looked in his whole college career.
Yeah. And that, the one thing that stands out about the Hoosiers every time you watch them, that defense creates turnovers.
Always.
Regardless.
And it's because of their disguise. They disguise as well as anybody pre-snap. And then switch to something different with their safety spots as good as anybody in the country.
Okay, buddy. Let's get into your dude of the week. Who's it? Who's the guy on tape that's standing out?
Well, I know people don't watch Pac-12 football and they go to sleep at night because, you know, they eat dinner and you know, there's nothing else to do. I've watched football all day. I'm going to bed. But you miss out on Nate Landman, by the way, who's 53 for Colorado. If you watched the game this past week against Arizona, and if you did like me, you're probably a loser too, because the game was pretty awful back and forth. But the dude at one point I wanted to send y'all a snapshot. I texted y'all, but had blood coming out of his forehead, blood coming out of his knee. Like, he looked like he had just been jumped by 17 people. And the dude just runs around the field and tackles everything. He blitzes him. They blitz him like crazy. He's an old school linebacker. You know, he's got the big shoulder pads. He blitzes a ton. He's got four games. He's got almost 50 tackles, you know, 8 tackles for a loss, 4 sacks. He's a dude. He's so fun to watch. A throwback, a guy that I respect the heck out of the way he plays the football game.
Can we give Carl Durrell some love too? It's pretty remarkable what he's done to be 4-0, not getting any kind of love. To come in February to take over a program and convincing your quarterback Neuer, they run the football really well. Ton of love to Carl Durrell.
Broussard needs some love too. That dude's an animal and running.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, my God, he's first back in Colorado history to go over 104 consecutive weeks, and he only put up 3 hundo last week.
Were you texting me about him? You were texting me. Was that you? We were getting you were going off on. Yeah.
Yeah, he's okay. Good. Taylor was saying he wasn't too bad on the text message feed, but he's he's really, really good. You watch him, he's shifty, he's got enough speed, he can, and then Chenault's little brother starting to come on a little bit too. Colorado's got some things cooking, baby.
Good for them. And honestly, they deserve it. And we'll get to them on our picks as they face Utah on Friday night. That should be a lot of fun in Boulder. Who's your matchup of the week? Because when you look at some of these games, you're like, I'm not sure about many of these. Is there a game you can't wait to see?
Dude, there is one in particular, and it's North Carolina and Miami.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I mean, I don't know what the over-under is. Go ahead, do your little thing on your
67 and a half.
Good Lord. Wow.
That's because of North Carolina, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be as entertaining as a game as there is in the day, like throughout college football. I mean, you got two offenses that can score, two defenses that give up big plays, give up points. I think it'll be two of the better quarterbacks in the country. Derek King, man, golly, he's had a great season. And, you know, when he went to Miami, I kind of went, why? You know, why on earth would you go to Miami? They haven't had any kind of offensive identity in years. They haven't had a good quarterback in years. And now he's, you know, got 20 touchdowns and 4 picks and running the football. And you could see growth in the passing game. And I'm not sure he's a Sunday player regardless, but man, he's brought some energy back to Miami. And I guarantee Miami wishes they had him for a couple more years. Like that.
Yeah.
Like, dang, this would be nice.
Yeah, he's added stability to that position, something they haven't had in a long, long time. And for Miami, it feels like they've been so under the radar just because off that Clemson loss, they've handled their business since. But this is a year where they didn't have Notre Dame on the schedule. And I'm sure that they wish they had the chance at least to face Notre Dame to be in the
conference. If you want to talk about Miami too, you know, I think it was 44-41 NC State game that they pulled out of the fire, you know, fortunately. I think it was 25-24 Virginia Tech game that they pulled out of the fire. It's not like you don't look at them and think they've been a dominant team. I think you've seen spurts, but I think when you saw them, you know, against Clemson and it was, you lose, you know, 40 something to 17 or whatever it was.
42-17. Like,
yeah. You got beat up pretty good. Like you didn't belong. You proved you didn't belong. So I think that, you know, they've earned, I don't think they've earned the right to be any higher than they are, but they've been in our conscience. They've played well. Derek King especially has been transcendent. But I don't think they're undervalued at 10 or anything like that. I think they're where they belong.
Okay, it's time to get to our picks. Because you know what? Taylor pulled up a bunch of close games, and I actually like a handful of these games on the schedule here. And
sweet.
Let's update everybody. I've cut the deficit down to 6 now. I each week I pick up a game as we're entering the final week.
You need to start taking a few risks here.
Yeah, I definitely do. And unfortunately, we didn't pick last week we didn't pick our upset special, and
that cost us. I didn't get on national television on game day. I'm just saying. I picked Indiana. Like, just saying.
Hey, Taylor, did you hear that? Pollock picked Indiana. It's the first time I've heard that. So
I'm just saying. Like, I should get credit for it. That's okay.
Yeah, you can't pat yourself any harder on the back, man. It's got to be worn off.
LEO.
All right, let's go. Let's start. Utah, Colorado. The game we set up there. Colorado's favored by 2 at home.
I tell you what, I haven't been impressed with Utah this season either, by any stretch. And I've been impressed with Colorado. And this is one of those, how much do you really believe in Colorado?
Exactly.
So I'm going Utah.
Okay. I was leaning Utah, but since you're picking Utah, I got to pick up some ground. So I'm going to take Colorado. How about that?
All right, I like
it. I've got to do that. I've got to save some face here and find a way to get some ground. All right, here's another good one, and we just talked about it. North Carolina, Miami. Miami favored by 3.5. These are all pick 'em games here for our audience.
You're good, bro. Don't try to do
this. I'm going Carolina.
Sit behind me.
I'm going Carolina. And ready for this, Taylor? This will be my upset special.
I love Carolina, by the way.
I like Carolina's balance versus King is kind of has to run the football too much. But my God, Carter, you can hand the ball off. But I will say this, Miami can rush the passer and they can put some pressure on QBs and make it maybe interesting. I trust North Carolina's offense to hit a good number. I don't trust Miami's offensive line to continue to hold up. Derek King has to be Superman. And I like Superman, Batman, and, you know, whoever else you want to throw on the list with Hal, Carter, and Brown. You know, I'll take the variety.
And Williams, right? I mean, they've got
absolutely
a 1-2 punch. So you're going with the Tar Heels and Mac, of course. Let's go to this one. This is an interesting line. This is Wisconsin, Iowa. Started out -3, Iowa, and now it's even. It's a pick'em game. Wow. Wisconsin, Iowa.
I have been less than impressed with Wisconsin. I mean, way less than impressed. I don't like what I see from them at all. I don't. Offensively, they don't have playmakers. They don't run the football great. So I think Iowa will run the football well enough. I think they won't beat themselves. The quarterback matchup, I think obviously Mertz is better than Petras, but I think Iowa and Goodson's running game, it will be more consistent. So I'll take Iowa.
I would take Iowa too. I just trust them more. I'm stunned.
You need to pick up games, and it's a pick 'em game.
Yeah,
you need to go the other direction.
You do you, bro.
You do you.
I know. I mean, you don't tell me what to do. I feel like I'm comfortable with Iowa. I still want to feel good in the win column.
You do great. You do you, and you keep losing. Good job.
Let's go Oklahoma State, Baylor. And I bring this up because Oklahoma State's favored by only 5. But now what we're seeing with the Cowboys is their classic thing here, right? Being in the season, okay, we're not sure. As the season continues, you're like, okay, I'm believing in this team. And then they just hit this wall annually. And they're facing a Baylor team where their record is really deceptive at 2-6. I think Aranda's team did a pretty good job at slowing Oklahoma down last week. And
so, okay, jump on in. Go Baylor.
And Baylor's at home, but man, Oklahoma State can score.
You're giving me all these good things.
I'm going to Oklahoma State. I'm going to Oklahoma State.
I mean, I'm going Cowboys too, but my God, last week was ugly.
It was.
And let's stop talking about Oklahoma State's defense, by the way. Let's get rid of that. But let's stop giving them praise. But I tell you what, you know, I do think Oklahoma State's offense is better without Chuba Hubbard. I mean, Jackson's been toting the pill. He's been doing a better job than Chuba has, you know, running the football. So, you know, maybe a little bit more balanced. I don't believe in Oklahoma State, but I mean, I believe in Baylor less. So I'll take Oklahoma State.
Okay. So we're on the same page there. Interesting game because it's on the ACC network Saturday night. Virginia Tech favored by 2.5 points.
Yeah, you know what? Every year, and I don't know why. I think it's just, you know, I always cheer for the underdog, by the way. Like, that's just my nature. Every year you watch this Virginia game, and every year Virginia just finds a way to give it away. Like, they always give it away. They find a way to somehow lose the game. And I don't know why. I don't know why it has to happen that way. But, you know, I got a feeling it's going to change. I got the Cavaliers. I got Virginia.
Son of a. Because I wanted Virginia so bad. The way you were trending there, I was feeling really good with this pick.
Well, go. I mean, you can do that.
No.
I'll go Virginia Tech if you want to switch.
By the way, a year ago, Virginia had a phenomenal performance, stopping that 15-game losing streak to Virginia Tech.
They lost 15 games before that in a row.
Yes, but that was a fun game to watch. Bryce Perkins, man, he was really fun to watch as a college football player. So, since you're picking Virginia, I'm going to go with Virginia Tech.
That's smart. It's a good move.
Yeah.
The thing I do like about Virginia is I do like Armstrong. Like I just
yes, I do too.
He can't stay healthy because he gets beat up because he's so physical. But lefty number five looks good slinging the pill around and running.
Okay, an interesting game that I wish brought a little more fanfare. You're going to see primetime on ABC, and it's USC UCLA, and a great storied rivalry, kind of been on the back burner because of the recent dominance that we've seen from USC. But Chip's team is playing much better this year.
You buying in? You believe in?
SC's favored by 3 in this game. I'm going to go with USC because I thought their offense looked really good on Sunday, man. They look like a
first
different
time.
Team. Yeah,
first time.
They look like a different team. I do like how what Chip's doing with UCLA though, but I'm going with USC.
I like what Chip's doing. I like the running game. You know, I mean, if you're watching Felton, he's toting rock, and I think they've played 5 games, and he's, you know, at over 100 yards a game. Like that's really good. That's Chip-esque, right? Like that makes you think about Chip back in the day. I don't think their passing game is dynamic as Trojan, but I also don't trust USC at all. Like I don't. They're ranked 15th because the committee doesn't trust them either. Like I get it. I don't really trust them, but I do think because of Slovis and the playmakers, I trust them to make more plays, and I'll take USC as well.
Okay. And let's wrap it up here with the game you guys are going to be at game day. Navy at Army. Army favored by 6.5 points.
Boy, is that a surprise? I mean, come on, let's go. Like I do.
In a game like this, I don't know if I would have 6.5 points.
Okay, what do you got?
I don't know. I'm asking you. I went with USC last pick.
I know, but you can go ahead and go because I picked.
No,
the same
that's
team
okay. Let's hear what you have to say.
I pick the same team every year in this matchup.
What is that?
Even if I'm going to lose, I'm still going Army all the time.
Why?
My uncle's in the Army.
We've got the explanation. All right.
He's a four-star general in the Army.
That's awesome.
Gus is a stud, and I'm always going Army because of my homeboy.
That's awesome. And tell him thank you for serving our country and making the daily sacrifices for us. I will go Navy for one reason only. I need to find a way to make a little bit more ground.
Yeah, you do.
So, listen, I gave us North Carolina as my upset special. So, who's going to be your upset special here?
North Carolina, come on.
No. Hey, you can't pick the same one as me.
Why not? No.
You said that Taylor, didn't he do this? He did this a few weeks ago. I picked the same one as me. He's like, no, you can't pick the same one. Pick something else. Pick another one.
I didn't hear Taylor chime in there.
You got to pick a different one. That's the rule. We've done it all season.
Stop yelling at me, Taylor. I'll slap the piss out of you. I'll take Wake Forest. Oh, you know what I should do? I do like Wake Forest.
Yes.
I should take one side of the coin that you picked the other. I should take Virginia Tech, and that way I'm guaranteed. Or no. I should take Army. Because now I'm guaranteed to get.
No, you would take Navy. You would take Navy.
Yeah, whatever I'm trying to say. Whatever. Okay. It's not working.
What's your mind as you talk this out publicly?
I like Wake Forest. I think Wake Forest will win outright. I'll take Wake Forest.
Yeah, that line is wild, right?
Yeah.
Like for Louisville by 2?
Louisville's a good. I mean, they're a good offense and they can be really good, but they have consistently been a nonprofit all year long, giving the ball away. And as Sam Hartman and Wake Forest and Clawson, they score. I mean, they just they score points. So I'll take Wake Forest.
All right, buddy. Well, we'll see how this plays out. And of course, have fun in that environment, West Point. That'll be pretty freaking cool. I mean, I have a game there.
By the way, we never go there.
I know.
We don't do that. We always go to Pennsylvania every year. So pretty awesome to.
Well, specifically, you go to Philadelphia. You go to my city. Yeah, you go to Philadelphia.
It's just nice not to have to go to that city. Okay, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm leaning towards. All right, it's nice not to have to go to that place. Let's go somewhere a lot nicer, like New York.
Yeah, we all know the next year is going to be in Philadelphia. Somebody's going to give you some brotherly love. We all know that, and that means duck. So, hey, have fun, and we'll catch up over the weekend.
All right, dudes.
It's my pleasure to bring in one of the best writers, I think, in the entire world. And I'm not overstating that. It is Wright Thompson, part of our team over at ESPN.com, senior writer. And his spin, his perspective on anything he sees and puts it on paper or on your screen always pops out. And he's got a fantastic piece on Archie Manning and what we saw 5 decades ago. And Wright, great to have you here on the College Football Podcast. Let's start first, though, just on your assessment this season, because we've experienced something that I think we're going to tell our kids and grandkids about. Yeah, remember in 2020, all this stuff was going on, and they decided to have a college football season, and nothing made sense, yet everything made sense to the right people. How would you describe this season playing out as an Ole Miss fan?
Well, I mean, we've not been good. And so, look, Ole Miss has not been good at all. There have been some bright spots. I'm looking forward to whatever the Lane Train offense brings. But I think most Ole Miss fans have just decided that, well, this was just an exhibition season anyway. And so none of this really mattered or counted, and we'll be ready for real football to start in 2021. I imagine Alabama fans would disagree with me, but it's just been a very, very weird year. I underestimated how much the physical connection to the games sort of influenced my fandom. I mean, I was out, my uncle has this hunting camp out across the levee, and I'd spent a Friday night there a couple of weeks ago, and I was driving back to Oxford Saturday morning, and there was a lot of traffic, and I was like, what is going on? And then I was like, oh my God, there's an Ole Miss game today. And like the degree to which I normally have my life revolve around those things. I mean, I used to travel a ton for ESPN back before all of this. And like, I have sort of jiggered my travel schedule so that I would be home for those 8 Saturdays a year. And I'd forgotten there was a game, and that was a real thing for me.
Now, I think Ole Miss fans would agree that while a lot of this feels like an exhibition, the Egg Bowl counts, regardless, no matter what, in 2020, the Egg Bowl counts.
Right? 100%. Ole Miss's record in 2020 is 1-0.
Exactly. So we started the conversation on Lane. Like, what are the highlights like? What's the energy like for Ole Miss fans right now watching this offense when you can watch the offense and the vibe that you guys have? Because, again, that game against Bama, you guys went head-to-head and toe-to-toe, but you don't have enough horses in the end, right? And you don't have anybody on defense to counteract on the firepower that Alabama has. And that's not a knock on your defense. That's just every defense in the country when they're facing Alabama. What's it been like, this Lane experience, for you in year one?
Well, I mean, it's like watching a car drive real fast with no brakes. I mean, it's exciting. I mean, who knows how this is going to all end. Lane doesn't give a damn about anything, which is that always goes over really well in Oxford. But, you know, I mean, like, that Alabama game was fabulous. I mean, you know, the Lane and the offensive coordinator called a fabulous game. Ole Miss really never has the horses to beat Alabama. Every now and then it happens. So that felt like it always feels hopeful. And yet, you know, we got to get a defense. You got to have a defense to play in the SEC. Everybody knows it. But I mean, people are really excited, and in some ways, like I said, like looking at this is just sort of like Lane's practice run, and we'll start for real next fall.
Yeah, and just get his horses right. Get when he can get his recruiting classes together, watch out. It's going to be a lot of fun. And everything he does is entertaining because you just literally have no idea what he's going to do. And that's, as you mentioned, a fan favorite already. I can't wait to check out this piece that you have with Archie Manning. Before we get into it, there's a fantastic backstory on how you did it while quarantining. Can you go into specifics on what went down? Because when you're in quarantine and we're used to this, the Zoom life, right? You can't really get to know somebody, but you didn't have to do the Zoom life here while getting to the heart of the story with Archie. What'd you have to do?
Well, it's, you know, my whole job, we've talked about this before, but like my thing is a face-to-face business, you know, and Zoom just doesn't cut it. And so I started looking around right after the pandemic started because, you know, I needed stories to go do, and I needed to be able to drive to them, and I needed to be able to do them in person. And Archie and Olivia were spending time in Oxford because they have a condo here that's next door to my mom's condo. And so I just called Archie and was like, look, if we sit far apart, can we just sit on your front porch and rock in chairs and do this? So that's what we did. And it was a, you know, it was sort of my saving grace because it gave me something to do during the quarantine. I mean, I've got a bunch of other stuff going on too, but it was like, you know, I felt like I was actually doing my job and not just sitting around collecting a paycheck. And I liked, like, you know, I joke, I grew up Episcopalian, which means I unfortunately have Protestant work ethic and Catholic guilt. So like, I was like, you know, like I gotta, like I had to go do something. And so this was doable. And, you know, I've long been fascinated with Archie Manning. I mean, I knew Archie growing up. My dad was in college with Archie and Olivia. And so, you know, I've grown up knowing him and knowing about him. And the jumping off point for the story was, you know, it's been 50 years since the legend of Archie Manning was born. And I wanted to talk to Archie and Olivia, who were pretty normal, down-to-earth people, about their 50-year relationship with this sort of avatar of the famous Archie Manning. Like, you know, when did they, how long did it take to get to know who this person was and who he wasn't? And when did they resent it? And when did they like it? And so, I mean, I wanted to talk to him about, you know, 50 years of that.
What did you learn?
That, you know, it's interesting. Archie is most famous for sort of handing down DNA and work ethic and character, et cetera, to his two famous sons, right? I mean, he's most famous in the country for, you know, what his boys inherited from him. And, you know, if you're in a triangle between, say, Memphis, New Orleans, and Destin, Florida, he's one of the most famous people alive. But for the rest of the country, that's what he's known for mostly. And a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, Archie, right before Archie's junior year, he was home for a couple of weeks after summer practice, and he walked into his house and discovered that his father had killed himself. And Archie's the one who found his dad. He almost never talks about this. He cleaned up the scene. He called a family friend to make sure his mother didn't come home. You know, we got the police or the coroner to get over there. Like, he walked into that house, as he told me, a boy, and walked out of it a man. And he didn't want to go back to Ole Miss. He was going to quit football and get a job. And his mother, Sis, who I also knew very well growing up, insisted he go back to Ole Miss. And 35 days later, he started his first football game for Ole Miss as a junior. And 2 weeks after that, he goes and plays at Alabama, which is the second ever primetime game, and really the first highly promoted, touted primetime football game, and accounts for 540 yards of total offense. And the legend of Archie Manning is born. And I guess I've never really realized until, I mean, I've thought and talked about Archie Manning my whole life, but I didn't really realize until I started doing this piece that there were only 49 days separating Archie finding his father and Archie becoming a folk hero. And in some ways, his life and therefore this story is about how he's worked to close the gap of those 49 days.
What was it like talking to him about this? Because, again, you know, right, when we look at the history and and the personalities and the stars that you've sat down with, the one thing that I always get out of it, I just go back to your conversation with Michael Jordan. This was before The Last Dance and before he was really publicly speaking about who he is and what he's about. Your piece always stood out to me. And you get to the heart of the person, not so much the heart of the superstar. What did you get out of this when you're talking to him and he's explaining the experience of finding his father, as well as then 7 weeks later or 5 weeks later playing in one of the biggest games looking back that changed college football?
You know, I mean, I don't want other people I've written about this to hear this and be like, what the hell? But I mean, you know, he was friends with my father. And so I was very nervous and I tried to be hyper respectful and inch up to it, you know? If you're from Mississippi, it's hard to explain how Archie Manning exists in the imagination. I was more starstruck by Archie Manning than Michael Jordan.
Still to this day, like that conversation with him, you're still starstruck with Archie Manning.
I was more nervous to ask uncomfortable questions to Archie Manning than I was to Michael Jordan, for sure.
Wow.
I mean, wow. Not even close. I mean, like literally, it's not even the same thing. And so he was very gracious. And I mean, as he always is. I mean, it's interesting in that one of the things that Archie is sort of known for is if you enter his life, he will keep in touch. You know, if I have a story run, I'll get a text message from Archie Manning. If you went to the Manning Passing Academy and then 8 years later had a really good arena football game, you'll get a text message from Archie Manning. He has a text thread called the Dirty 30, which was his recruiting class, and they're still on it. And, they all just call him 18, which is funny. But, you know, it was interesting. I knew that about Archie, but I never really thought about why that was. And it occurred to me that, you know, he let his father slip through his fingers. And, I don't know if this is why he's like he is now, but in the 51 years since then, if you enter his life, he doesn't let anyone go. And I thought that was really interesting.
That is fascinating. And listen, I had the pleasure of talking to Archie and Olivia a handful of times, and they are as real as it gets. They are royalty in the South, and yet
when you walk, normal.
Yeah, that's the one thing that stands out every single time I have a conversation with them, and that could be running into them at dinner, running into them at an event. It is just like, hey, we pick up where you left off. It's a very casual. He has such a way of making you feel like you're the only person in the room, and he is focused on talking to you, not gaining some type of information. It's just more like, how are you? You know. That's a special talent because not many people can have that, especially in the limelight each and every day. And you are talking to somebody, that is nervous to talk to you and in every turn. And yet he treats you like you're special and you're the reason why I want to talk to you. And that's a talent that him and Olivia have. And it's a talent that I've seen also with his sons, in conversations. And right, this article or this piece is going to be on ESPN Plus, right?
Yeah, this is the first one of these, and so folks got to sign up, and I think it's a good one to do that. I mean, I think if Archie Manning has been on the public stage now since October of 1969, and I feel like even if you've read a lot about him, you haven't read this.
Can't wait. If it's written by you, no one else has written it. Trust me, it's because it's a certain look and style that you have that's unprecedented, right? Appreciate the time and sharing your experience there with Archie. And check it out on ESPN Plus, the sit-down conversation, Wright Thompson with Archie Manning. Big thank you to Wright Thompson. Anything he does is a must-read, and I recommend it over on ESPN Plus later this week to check it out, as well as David Pollack with his picks, and really good conversation on, you know, the matchup of the weekend, as well as his dude of the week. We do appreciate him pouring through the film that many of us would not do, but that he's addicted to, as well as Adam Rittenberg with the very latest information as we tape this podcast Wednesday morning. And our fingers are crossed as the weekend approaches us. We just say big thanks to Taylor Schwenk as well for coordinating the podcast, our fantastic producer here on the CFP podcast. If you want more football, we hope that you continue to practice social distancing and wearing a mask and stay safe and healthy. We'll talk to you next week.